You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. You want a truck? You want a great deal? You want great service? No better place to get it than Lakewood Chev. Shogger, I saved this text from yesterday's show. It said,
Hey,
Greger, if they trade Manning and Rashog's toe for a third rounder, I'll make the glass shoe. From a guy who works at Crystal Glass, because we were talking about how maybe they could make like a special glass shoe for you, so no one would accidentally step on your toe. So if we can make that happen, you'll have your own slipper. You're kind of like Cinderella of the media. So hopefully it fits. So keep that in mind if the Oilers manage to make a deal for Manning here in the near future.
Yeah, everybody's been so helpful for me. I really appreciate all the help.
Well, there's a lot of people who have gout, is what I've learned on Twitter the last few days. Lots of guys out.
There's not as many people talk about it.
It's true. Well, hey, you were the one who wanted to end the stigma, Shogger.
Exactly.
So maybe you know, I don't know if gout has a spokesperson or not, but maybe you could be the spokesperson for it.
All right, moving on.
Oscar Klefbom is back in and says his hand's feeling good enough that he's not going to be on the first unit power play. And I'll be curious to see if he actually takes many slap shots tonight.
Yeah, we talked to him a little bit today about that. And, you know, there's a real fine balance at play here for both Oscar Klefbom and the Oilers, because we've seen Klefbom in the lineup fighting through injury, not at 100%. We saw it for a lot of last season, and he's still a good defenseman and a valuable player, but not the elite level in his game that the Oilers require from him. So with an injury like this, here the team is reeling, absolutely desperate for help, and in particular on the blue line, so that everybody can start playing minutes that are more appropriate for them. So when do you bring Klefbom back? I mean, I don't think this was a situation where they waited until the player is absolutely 100% and then bring him back into the lineup. I don't think they've had that luxury. But what point is it worth it to bring Klefbom back? What percentage? Klefbom that can't really shoot the puck that well? Klefbom who can't have the same zip on his passes that he would normally want to have? It's a real tough balance. I get the feeling he's not coming back, you know, at 100%, and this might be early, but he wants to be out there. The team is desperate for him. I'll be really interested to see what he can do.
His return, I'm guessing he'll play around 20, 21 minutes. I don't see him up to 25 just yet, but he comes back. I'm curious if he, because he's been here, he's played, I think, the third most minutes on the penalty kill over the last 2 years. I went back and looked for basically two calendar seasons from the Edmonton Oilers going back to February 1st, 2017. Their penalty kill is 30th in the NHL at 76.4%. It's awful. You know, and it's basically 9 of their top 10 guys are still here who have been on the penalty kill. Nurse and Larson and Klefbom and Russell and Kara and Nugent Hopkins and Cassian and McDavid and Draisaitl. So they got to fix this from within. Like, you know, Matt Benning told me today, and he's actually 10th on that list of active guys in minutes, that he goes, it's not a structure thing, right? He feels it's not a structure. It's too often they have a chance, you know, to get it out. Guys don't get it out. They don't get it out, and then they're tired and the team scores. Like, it's their attention to detail as players, to me, has to improve on the penalty kill. What do you see as the problem?
Yeah, well, like we talked about yesterday, I mean, those details that you're talking about are things like jumping in and helping out on faceoffs and centers winning more faceoffs and never missing a clean opportunity to clear. Those are the basic things, you know, making sure you're not allowing cross seam passes. But I'm not sure. I can't help but feel like the Oilers' struggles on the penalty kill over a long period of time here don't tie directly in with the general idea that they need a better blue line. Because your best defensemen are your penalty-killing defensemen, and they're guys that can play those minutes, play them well, be dominant, and know how to do those things exceptionally well. And so I can't help but feel, as we often have the discussion about how do the Oilers have a top-pairing blue liner, let alone more than one, that the penalty kill is going to be an area that suffers when you're lacking those true top-end defensemen. And so, yeah, could it be a personnel issue in general? I think it could be. And we've been talking about this penalty kill not being good enough for a long time and talking about a blue line that needs to get better for a long time. I think they kind of go hand in hand.
Reiner Schaub from TSN joined us. Well, and their goaltenders. Like 63 goalies, Schauger, since that time have played at least 29 games. Cam Talbot's 59th in penalty kill save percentage, and Mikko Koskinen's 45th. So you need your goaltenders to make a few more saves as well.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. And it'd be nice if you could filter out the, you know, the tap-ins where the goalie, the cross-seam passes where the goalie never even had a chance. Well, but the good penalty-killing teams aren't going to have as many. And I would suggest because the Oilers haven't been a great penalty-killing team, a lot of goals, we've seen so many goals on passes whipped through the seam that should have never gotten through. That where the goaltender just doesn't have a chance at all. So I agree every team's going to have some of those. I think the Oilers have a lot of those. But there's no way to necessarily filter that statistic. But I'm not letting the goalies off the hook. They got to be better on the penalty kill. The numbers suggest they got to be better. We can see it. And your goaltender's got to be your best penalty killer, and they haven't had that in a long time. So no question about it. But, again, your defensemen are your linchpins back there. And, you know, we've been talking about the Oilers blue line needing to be better for a really long time. So it should be no coincidence that the penalty kill has the same narrative.
Ken Hitchcock's going to run with the three centers, mainly because they want to try to establish more consistent pressure from them. The one thing I noticed, well, a few things I noticed. Number one, Manny Viveros being on the bench for both games on the weekend, the entire game. That was the first time all season that's happened. I have a theory on why I think it's happened. And unfortunately, I was having a conversation today with Bob Nicholson, so I didn't get to ask Ken Hitchcock why Viveros is on the bench now full-time. Maybe that was the plan all year long, but I found it interesting coming out of the break. That was a change. We know that Hitchcock likes to get on guys, and Viveros more of a positive guy. I wonder if Hitchcock brought him in here to kind of, you know what, if he hammers on guys, you have the other coach who's coming, yeah, don't worry, good job, right? Find positive stuff. Like, I wonder if that's why he's there.
Yeah, good question. I wonder what that would have to do with. Maybe it's just a matter of changing things up. You know, maybe it's just a matter of wanting a different voice, changing a dynamic. A lot of times just shuffling things around and moving some deck chairs around can elicit change. A different voice, different reactions from a coach when you come back to the bench rather than the same old reactions from the coaches that have been there all year long. So might just be a change just for the sake of a fresh feel there. But that's interesting. Yeah, and we'll have to ask Hitch about that and see what kind of an impact that's had. But that's an interesting change. I don't think that was the plan all along. I think that
no.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, when Manny first got here, I wondered what his role would be and if he would end up on the bench at some point. And I think it was discussed as a possibility. But I think with McClellan, he just felt it was too crowded and immediately went away from it.
Yeah, well, he's been on the bench for the third period all season long, right? Just mm-hmm. Goes down for the third, and they just moved him there for the first and the second period. When you look at the top three line combinations right now, if they're going to move Jesse Puljujärvi off of the fourth line, which winger do you think is most likely to be taken out of the top nine and have Puljujärvi go?
Reeder.
In? Okay.
Reeder or Cassian, I would say. Thing is like Zach Cassian, if he's not producing, there's lots of other things that he can do well. Now, he's got to stay disciplined and not take bad penalties that hurt his team. But, I mean, he can hit. He can skate pretty fast. He can kill penalties. He's got decent hands. He can make some plays. I mean, Toby Reeder is just having a heck of a time getting anything done. Anything done at all. So I would say it would make most sense, you know, for him to get bumped. But, you know, Puljujärvi on this fourth line, like he's moving his feet. He's doing what he can. He's working hard. But again, we'll point right back to the same idea of, you know, what is he doing here playing on the fourth line? Don't quite understand it. But that's just where he's at, and they seem committed to having him here.
Yeah, I'm really perplexed by it. Especially we had Jay Woodcroft on the show earlier. They won 10 straight games down in Bakersfield. Guys are, you know, they're feeling good about their game. You know, he talked about Kyler Yamamoto when he got down there. He said, hey, the one thing we talked about him, we want his killer instinct around the blue paint to improve. He needs to have a little bit more of a killer instinct, get some offensive confidence, because shockingly he doesn't have any because he hasn't scored at all basically all season long. And, you know, I look at Jesse Puljujärvi now and I say, okay, in the 9 minutes or 10 minutes that he's playing on the fourth line, are you telling me that the Colby Cave or someone else you bring up from the minors couldn't do similar in those 9 minutes, whereas Puljujarvi could benefit more from playing in the American League?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a fourth overall pick who's supposed to provide offense at some point in his career here, that has 4 goals in 41 games, is playing 12 minutes a night, and is currently on their fourth line. This no longer makes any sense. I have no comprehension anymore of why they're doing this. Something tells me that there's something else at play here that we must not know about. Either, you know, he's refused to go down, or the agent is refusing for him to go down, or promises have been made, or there's something going on here, because this has not made any hockey sense for a really long time. And I don't understand it, don't get it. They're risking the development of this player, and they have been for some time now, and it's starting to border on ridiculous.
Jogger, enjoy the game. We'll see you there, and heal up. And so we don't have to hear about your GOT. Although, by the way, check out my Twitter feed. We did have somebody with a very, very funny play on the Timberlake tour and Reiner Schaug. So check it out.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to be honest with you.
No, you trust me. You'll get a good laugh. Well, you know, maybe I'll screen save it and text it to you just so you see it. Okay.